Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbath Training Congregation, outside the 12th Hour in Irving, Texas. Today is December the 23rd, 2024, or is the 23rd day of Sebet, 2028. We will start our service today with Shepherd Rod, Volume 2, and we're going to continue where we left off in our last study. We're on page 135 of Volume 2 of the Shepherd's Rod, and we're going to see what we got here. Okay, and we're in the subject matter of Part 2 of the Exceeding Great Horn. Had come out of Alexander's, the Third Kingdom, Daniel saw in vision. And we're on page 135. It says, for a special commission was granted to Sinanagus, the Praetorian Prefect of the East. And afterwards, through the counts Jovius and Gaudentius, reacted to shut the temple, to seize or destroy the instruments of the idols, tried to abolish the privileges of the priests, and to confiscate their consecrated property for the benefit of the emperor of the church or the army. Many of those temples were the most splendid and beautiful monuments of the Grecian architecture, and the emperor himself was interested not to deface the splendor of his own city or to diminish the value of his own possessions. And Assyria, the divine and excellent Marcellus, as he is styled, that is Theodoret, a bishop animated with the apostolic fervor, resolved to level with the ground the stately temples. But when a sentence of the destruction against the idols of Alexandria was pronounced, the Christians set up a shout of joy and exultation, while the unfortunate pagans, whose fury had given way to the consternation, retired with the hasty, if silent, steps. Theophilus proceeded to demolish the temple of Serapis and to content himself with the reducing of the edifice itself unto a heap of rubbish, a part of which was soon afterwards cleared away, to make room for a church created in the honor of the Christian martyrs. Gibbon's Rome, Volume 3, page 141-46. Thus the pagan joined the Christian church, or as we understand it, the apostolic church of the Nazarene that Yeshua raised up after his resurrection. And the pagans called it Christian church through force and bribery instead of conviction of sin, and thereby Christianity gave way unto idolatry. Says Gibbon, both religions had been alternately disgrace by the seeming acquisition of the worthless proselyte of those votaries of the reigning purple, who could pass without a reason, without a blush, from the church to the temple, and from the altars of the Jupiter to the sacred table of the Christians. Volume 2, 5522 ID. For the church in her purity is filled with the spirit of the meek and lowly, Yeshua battled against the oppression and torture, for they prayed for those who would take their lives, saying, Yahweh, forgive them, for they know not what they do. For they, like the Stephen, kneel down under a rain of the stone, pleading, and Yahweh lay not this sin to their charge. But the Christians, who were once zealous for the pure standard of the church, took the crown of evil authority and compelled the pagans to join their ranks. As the pagans and the Christians became one, the dragon wielded this power and great authority, and to the papacy. By this consecrated ecclesiastical monarchy, he erased the seventh-day Sabbath from the law of Yahweh, and in his stead he inserted the pagan Sunday. At this point, he directed his power against the disloyalty to the demands of the papacy. For this pontifical authority continued to wear out the saints of the Most High, as in the Daniel 7:25, and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in Babylon, and Daniel in Medo-Persia, prevented the establishment of an ecclesiastical government and brought to naught a king's demand or decree. Just so Luther abolished the pontifical monarchy and brought to an end the papal authority, as the Luther's blow weakened his power, and Protestantism continually irritated his wound. The Pope, by the hand of the Berthier, was put behind prison bars. How idol worship crept into the church. Just a few more lines from the pen of the Gibbon, describing how the idol and saint worship crept into the Christian church. For the bodies of the St. Andrew, St. Luke, and St. Timothy had reposed near 300 years in the obscure grave from whence they were transported in solemn pomp to the Church of the Apostles, which the magnificence of the Constitution founded on the banks of the Thracian Bosporus about 50 years afterward, for the same banks were honored by the presence of the Samuel, the judge and temple of the people of the Israel. His ashes deposited in a golden vase and covered with a silken veil were delivered by the bishops into each other's hands in a long period of 1,200 years, which elapsed between the reign of Constantine and the reformation of the Luther for the worship of the saints and relics corrupted the pure and perfect simplicity of the Christian model, and some symptoms of the degeneracy may be observed even in the first generations. When adopted and cherished, this pernicious innovation, the Christians frequented the tombs of the martyrs in the hope of obtaining from their powerful intercession every sort of the spiritual, but more especially of the temporal blessings. They employed the preservation of their health, or the core of their infirmities, the fruitfulness of their barren wives, or the safety and happiness of their children. Volume 3, page 156, 7, and 62. 162. So, let us continue reading. Now we're on page 137. We're on the third paragraph. It says, as the unjust persecution against the Christian has ceased, the church took the downward step. Though a few respected the sacredness of the Sabbath, they were not disturbed until after the ecclesiastical monarchy was set up in 538. For the dragon had carefully determined to obtain the perpetuity of the combined national religion, Christian in name, but pagan in practice. Satan designed to set up the papacy and to wear out the saints of the Most High for the persecution first against the early apostolic church, and second against the paganism, in favor of the Christianity was reversed under the papal rule. For the few Christians who reverenced the seventh-day Sabbath were in some respects hunted like rabbits. Well, no, this is not, this is, let's read that again. For the few apostolic converts that kept all of the sanctuary system with all the holy days, all 70, 52 seventh-day Sabbath, and six other holy days, Pentecost, Atonement, Passover, etc. These are the ones that held on to their faith, was reversed under the papal rule. For the few believers who reverenced the seventh day, or all of the sanctuary system, that wouldn't let go of any of the holy days, in some respects, hunted like rabbits, and there was demanded of them strict obedience to the legal but un-Christian religion of the popes. To come back to our subject, for the exceeding great horn, Rome, in her divided state, cast down the truth That's the sanctuary truth of Leviticus 23:1-44, starting with the seventh day Sabbath and ending with the atonement and the priest of tabernacles of the seventh month, and stamped upon it. But it was not accomplished in a sudden or arbitrary manner. Sunday observance gradually crept into the Christian church. At first, the morning hours were considered somewhat sacred because Yahshua had risen early on that day. After it had become formal, more sacredness was attached to it, and the hours were extended till noon. Finally, the entire day was set aside as a day of worship. While Sunday was growing more and more sacred, the seventh day Sabbath was on the decline and becoming less and less holy. Here we see an example that should be marked carefully by all apostolic believers and the sanctuary church. And obedience to it. For the adding of anything to the religion of Yahshua, though it may seem good on the surface, results in a deadly sting from beneath. Our Yahweh has devised a religion sufficient to save the church if carefully followed. For he needs no man's help, neither can he accept man-made devices. For I testify unto every man that heareth the words of the prophecy of this book. If any man shall add unto these things, Yahweh shall add unto him the plagues that are written in this book. And if any man shall take away from the words of the book of this prophecy, Yahweh shall take away his part out of the book of life and out of the holy city and from the things which are written in this book. Revelation 22:18-19. For the Roman church displays the simplicity of the truth with the human wisdom and traditions of man, or as Daniel puts it, an host pagan flood was given him against the daily by reason of the transgression. Now that daily is the call of 3 o'clock or the third hour of the morning and the ninth hour of the afternoon or the evening, and it cast down the truth of the whole sanctuary system is found in Leviticus 23:1-44, and it practiced and prospered, Daniel 8:12. For the host against the daily, they don't mind you keeping the holy days if you don't practice the daily it comes twice a day. The daily hour at the third hour and the ninth hour of each day, where the unconverted pagan brought into the church. Therefore, by reason of the transgression, how different from the method employed by the John the Baptist, though when he saw many of the Pharisees and Sadducees come to his baptism, he said unto them, O generation of the vipers, who hath warned you to flee from the wrath to come? Bring ye forth therefore fruits meet for the repentance. Matthew 3:7-8. It may be profitable to ask, is the church at the present time imitating John or the Roman? And her members, Christians or pagan. For the Yahweh charged his servant to warn ancient Israel against a similar disastrous practice. He said, "And thou shalt say unto the rebellious, even unto the house of Israel, thus saith to Yahweh, O ye house of Israel, let it not suffice you of all your abomination, and that you have brought into my sanctuary strangers, uncircumcised in the heart and uncircumcised in the flesh, to be in my sanctuary, to pollute even my house." Ezekiel 44:6-7. Truly are people working for Yahweh or for themselves. For the angel, in giving instruction unto Daniel, calls the Sabbath and the sanctuary truth, the truth. See Daniel 8:12. Indeed, it is the truth. In the keeping of the Sabbath, we honor Yahweh by the recognizing Yahshua's holy memorial of the creation. For the Yahweh who at the sundry times and in divers manners spake in time past unto the fathers by the prophet, hath in these last days spoken unto us by his Son, whom he hath anointed heir of all things, by whom also he made the world. Hebrews 1:1-2. Because sin entered the human family, the Yahweh instituted the sanctuary truth, which typically illustrates his sacrifice, death, and resurrection, the revelation of our redemption. Thus, in the keeping of the Sabbath and the whole sanctuary truth, we openly confess that Yahshua is both Creator and Redeemer. Therefore, the Son of Man is Yahshua also of the Sabbath day. Mark 2:28. For the Bible is the revelation of the Yahshua and redemption, and the Yahshua Creator and Redeemer. Therefore, the Sabbath and the whole sanctuary system constitutes the whole truth of salvation and redemption. See Hebrews 9:10, 4:4-10. Thus these two doctrines are coupled together, cannot be separated, and bear the whole truth. How do we keep the sanctuary truth? It is kept not in the type, but in the antitype. By the faith, we believe that Yahshua, our high priest, in the heavenly sanctuary is with the officiating in our behalf, as it were taught in the type by the earthly sanctuary built by the Moses, as the Israel complied with the requirements of his service in the type, so we must in the antitype. Thus we proclaim the true Sabbath, and we proclaim the truth of the whole sanctuary system more fully. That means, in other words, keeping all the other holy days in addition to the seventh day Sabbath that was first established in 1844 by Ellen G. White, the seventh day Sabbath. And then the light opened up on all these other holy days with Brother Betty Johnson in 1970. Summary. The horn bears rule over all the earth. Summary. The horn bears rule over all the earth. In order to fully comprehend what is being taught in this chapter, we again call attention unto the chart on page 128. Now let us follow the chart along with the reading. In the foregoing study, it is proven that the exceeding great horn of the goat does not represent the imperial Rome only, but also papal Rome, and the present world as well, for the horn first persecuted Yahshua and his followers under or with the jurisdiction of the Roman monarchy. For the truth expressed by the daily and the daily worship of the sanctuary, which is two times a day at the third hour and the ninth hour, were trodden down by reason of the transgression. And the period of the broken state of the Rome up unto 508 A.D. For the imperial government came to an end in the year of 476. Furthermore, the papal power treads Yahweh's truth to the ground up unto the termination of the prophets 1260 years, of the prophetic 1260 years. Let's read that again. Furthermore, the papal power treads the Yahweh's truth onto the ground up unto the termination of the prophetic 1260 years, and ended with the imprisonment of the Pope in 1798. But the sanctuary and the daily were held to the ground by the great horn up until 1844. At that time, he lost control of them, and the power of the three angels' messages raised the truth from the ground or from under the foot and placed it in the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Therefore, the great horn is a symbol of the entire New Testament period up until the second coming of the Yahshua, corresponding with the legs of the iron. Siviti, how does it know that the second coming of Yahshua took place in 2002 at Kermit, Texas? Invisible, but it took place because he come to set up his antitypical David to be ruler over the kingdom of David, fulfilling Daniel 2:44-45, where it says, "In the days of these kings shall the Yahweh of the heavens set up a kingdom that will here on earth in the 12th parabolic hour that will never be destroyed or left to other people, but it will strike the image on the feet, that beast, and it will grow into a mountain and shall the whole earth." Okay, therefore the great horn is a symbol of the entire New Testament period up until the second coming of Yahshua. And after the second coming of Yahshua, because Yahshua comes in the 12th parabolic hour and works that whole one prophetic hour with his 144,000 and his people for the harvesting, because they help Yahshua harvest the people of the world, both the dead and the living. Second coming of Yahshua corresponding with the legs of the iron and the feet and toes of the great image of the Daniel 3. These are facts which cannot be denied. However, there is another proof that bears evidence of the same. Said the prophet, "And after the king of Babylon shall arise another kingdom inferior unto thee, and another third kingdom of the breast, which shall bear rule over all the earth." Daniel 2:39. For the brass kingdom is accepted to represent Grecia, but The fact is that Grecia never did bear rule over all of the earth. For the most distant point of the compass reached by the Alexander the Great was a portion of the India. Neither did the Imperial Rome bear rule over all the earth. What then? Is Daniel wrong in the interpretation of the dream? If there is any error, Daniel cannot be at fault, for the responsibility would naturally fall on the Asura, who was the overseer of all the writings and the interpretations of the scriptures. If Daniel had made a mistake, it was Yahweh's duty to have him corrected. But as Yahweh is perfect in all his works, he cannot allow error in his holy word. Daniel is correct in his interpretation, and the brass kingdom must bear rule over all the earth. For all else may fail, but Yahweh's word shall stand forever. When the ghost's notable horn between his eyes, Alexander, was broken off, four others came up in its stead. The four divisions of the Grecia, after this, another little horn came up from one of the four, and it waxed exceedingly great toward the south, and toward the east, and toward the pleasant land, Daniel 8:9. Note that this horn waxed exceedingly great. That is to say, he was greater than the one between his eyes, Alexander. The exceeding great horn went toward the south and toward the east and toward the pleasant land, Jerusalem. As in the Psalms 106:24 and Zechariah 7:14, geographically Babylon, where Daniel had the vision, lies east of Jerusalem. Thus, in the vision, the goat stood in Babylon to make the circle. The horn consequently went toward the four corners of the compass, or as the Daniel puts it, toward the south and towards the east and toward the pleasant land. For the system denotes that the exceedingly great horn would extend its dominion over all the earth, the four corners of the compass. The fact is, the horn represents Rome and its three divisions, imperial, papal, and the present unstable world. For the Bible is correct in making the statement concerning the kingdom of brass, that it shall bear rule over all the earth. For the brass represents the goat. Thus, the prophet stated, and he goat came from the west on the face of the whole earth, Daniel 8:5. Had Daniel said of the nondescript beast, a symbol of the imperial and papal Rome, that it would bear rule over all the earth, the claim would prove incorrect. For the nondescript beast in his first stage represents imperial Rome, and in the second stage, papal Rome, up to 1798, at which time the beast came to its end with the imprisonment of the Pope Pius the sixth or the fifth, and gave place unto the leopard-like beast of the Revelation 13:1-3. Note the accuracy of the inspiration. Has the prophet said for the kingdom of the let's do that again. Had the prophet said the kingdom of the iron shall bear rule over all of the earth. It would have been true as far as the iron bearing rule, but such an affirmation would have discredited the wonderful lesson taught by the symbolic goat. What is true of the iron and clay is true of the goat